Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I'm going to take us now through the book of Leviticus chapter 17, which concerns the place of sacrifice, general laws concerning whether the Israelites were to sacrifice their sacrifices, and the prohibition against eating blood. 16 verses in this chapter. Our previous chapter, our context is this. In Leviticus 16, we talked about the Day of Atonement, Tishri 10. So let's start now in Leviticus 17, 1 through 4. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to Aaron and to his sons and to all the sons of Israel and say to them, this is what the Lord has commanded, saying, any man from the house of Israel who slaughters an ox or a lamb or a goat in the camp or who slaughters it outside the camp and has not brought it to the doorway of the tent of meeting to present it as an offering to the Lord before the tabernacle of the Lord, blood guiltiness is to be reckoned to that man. He has shed blood, and that man shall be cut off from among his people." Let's get some basic terminology out of the way first. The tent of meeting is the tabernacle. The doorway of the tent of meeting is the doorway that leads into the holy place, the 10 by 20 room where the bread of the presence and the golden seven-stick candlestick is. And when it refers to doorway of the tent of meeting, it's talking about the bronze altar of burnt offering, which is there at that doorway, out in the front of it a little bit. So the doorway of the tent of meeting is the bronze altar. Verse 1 says, "The Lord spoke to Moses, saying," now many of these chapters that we start out with the Lord speaking either to Moses or to Aaron or both Moses and Aaron. This is a continuation of a conversation that started in Leviticus 1, verse 1. That verse says, "The Lord spoke to him from the tent of meeting," spoke to Moses. So we assume that this is God in the Shekinah glory at the doorway describing all of the sacrifices and all of the laws that are to be implemented later on. All the commentators I looked at to see exactly where the Lord was spoken to Moses or when, they just breezed past this verse without commenting. I guess they're tired of it because it shows up so much. But if we go back to verse 1 of Leviticus, this is a continuation of that conversation. We tend to forget that because we're 17 chapters into it. And so God is speaking to Moses at the doorway of the tent of meeting through the Shekinah glory. God tells Moses in verse 2, "Speak to Aaron and to his sons." Those sons, of course, of Aaron were missing Nadab and Abihu, the two oldest sons. They had gotten killed in chapter 10 for offering strange fire, improper offerings. So that left Eleazar and Ithamar. And these sons are now constituted as ordinary priests. They've already been ordained as just ordinary priests, but they're going to inherit the priesthood because the high priesthood that Aaron had was hereditary. So when Aaron died, Eleazar was going to take over. And when Eleazar died, Ithamar was going to take over. And as we go through the Old Testament, we'll see Eleazar and Ithamar showing up a good bit. Now, verse 3 says, "Any man from the house of Israel who slaughters an ox or a lamb or a goat in the camp." Now, I meant to talk about, when I was talking about doorway of the tent of meeting, I also wanted to talk about the camp. What is the camp? Well, the camp is outside the doorway of the outer court, not the doorway of the tent of meeting, but the doorway of the outer court, the tent, the curtain that surrounds the courtyard. It had a doorway into that to the east. And outside of that doorway, you're in the camp. That's where the Israelites lived. Now, once you get past their tents, their living area, you're out into the wilderness. That's outside the camp. Now, any man who slaughters one of these three animals in the camp, that's where the Israelites lived, or who slaughters it outside the camp, beyond the camp, into the wilderness, doesn't matter, and has not brought it to the doorway of the tent of meeting, to the bronze altar, to present it as an offering, he's blood guilty and he's going to be cut off. Cut off either means executed or exiled. So this is serious business. Now, the big question that arises here is, are these ox and lambs and goats that are referred to here, does that refer to ordinary food, or does it refer to lambs, oxes, lambs, and goats that were to be offered for sacrifices? The commentators split on that. I'm going to take one side of that issue. I'm going to say that this restriction that these oxes and lambs are goats, those are sacrificial oxes and lambs and goats that are restricted to be slaughtered at the bronze altar. It's not talking about every ox or lamb or goat that the Israelites sat down to eat. Now, John Gill agrees with me, and so does Matthew Poole. May God bless them. Here's four arguments that they use to show that this restriction is only for sacrifices. It's only the sacrifices that have to be brought to the bronze altar, not just common food that the Israelites needed to eat. Argument number one, it was not common to kill animals for common food outside the camp. Normally, animals for food were killed inside the residential tents. So there's no real need to prohibit killing animals for food outside the camp since that really happened. And yet this verse does condemn that, prohibits that, no killing of animals outside the camp. But animals outside the camp, you know, maybe for a sacrifice, but not for food, because food was killed inside the tent. And this prohibition here refers to animals outside the camp, and those animals were likely to be sacrifices only. Leviticus 17:5 refers to these sacrifices, these animal slaughterings outside the camp. Leviticus 17:5 says, "This is so the Israelites will bring to the Lord the sacrifices that have been offering in the open country." That's outside the camp. And so that's probably what's being talked about here. Not common food, because common food is not outside the camp. All right, so argument number one, which I think is pretty good. Argument number two, which is sort of related, the very next verse, the context, is Leviticus 17:5, which I just read part of. I'll read it again. "This is so the Israelites will bring to the Lord the sacrifices they've been offering in the open country. They are to bring them to the priest at the entrance of the tent of meeting and offer them as fellowship sacrifices to the Lord. This is so the Israelites will bring to the Lord the sacrifices they have been offering in the open country." So it's talking about sacrifices in the very next verse. If the very next verse is talking about sacrifices, why would it be talking about common food? That's argument number two. Now let's go to argument number three. We drop down to verse 13 of Leviticus 17, and we read this. "Any Israelite or foreigner living among them who hunts down a wild animal or bird that may be eaten must drain its blood and cover it with dirt." Well, now, this shows that food animals could be slaughtered outside the tabernacle, wild animal or bird. Wild animal, say it's a deer, a bird, a dove, or pigeon, those are allowed to be eaten away from the bronze altar in the courtyard, temple tabernacle courtyard. So that's just in verse 13. So the context of this chapter is still talking about, or this verse shows that food animals could be slaughtered outside the tabernacle. So if food that is a wild animal, a bird, in verse 13 could be slaughtered outside the tabernacle, why cannot food animals in verse 4, where we are, also be used for food and can be sacrificed outside the tabernacle? Bulls, sheep, and goats. So if bulls, sheep, and goats can be used for food, then that means the bulls, sheep, and goats that are being referred to in verse 3 are talking about sacrificial bulls, sheep, and goats. And the implication from verse 13, if wild animals are eaten there for food, animals that may be eaten, may be sacrificed outside the temple, why can't bulls, goats, and lambs that are to be eaten for food, why can't they be sacrificed outside the temple? Argument number four, this is from the pulpit commentary. This is a simple argument. "You mean that for 600,000 men, every time they wanted to kill an animal, they had to bring it to the court? How you going to fit all those animals inside that courtyard?" Here's the direct quote. "That every ox or lamb or goat to be killed in the camp or out of the camp for the food of more than 600,000 men should be brought to so confined a space as the court of the tabernacle for slaughter, where the animals for the daily, weekly, annual, and innumerable private sacrifices were also killed, appears almost incredible in itself. How would the drivers have made their way into it? And what would have been the state of the court?" I'll tell you what the state of the courtyard would have been. It would have been filled with animal poop about 7 feet high. So I really think that this idea that ordinary food is being referred to here in verse 4, I don't believe it. Or verse 3, I don't believe it. However, there are some commentators, for example, Adam Clark, that says that the verse does refer to common food, and he says that every ox, every lamb, every goat that wants to be eaten by the Israelites, they first had to take it to the tabernacle and offer it as a peace offering so they could get a share of it to eat. And I really think that's it. Really, I just don't believe it. But Adam Clark says, so here's what he says, quote, "While the Israelites were encamped in the wilderness, it was comparatively easy to prevent all abuses of this divine institution. And therefore, they were all commanded to bring the oxen, sheep, and goats to the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, i.e. to the bronze altar, that they might be slain there and their blood sprinkled upon the altar of the Lord. But when they became settled in the promised land, and the distance in many cases rendered it impossible for them to bring the animals to be slain for domestic uses to the temple, they were permitted to pour out the blood in a sacrificial way unto God at their respective dwellings and to cover it with dust. Now, Clark, to prove that, he quotes two verses, and one of them obviously refers to when they get to Jerusalem, they don't have to carry it to the temple anymore. So that's not controversial. Let me read that, Deuteronomy 12, 20 through 21. When the Lord your God enlarges your territory as he has promised you, and you say, I want to eat meat, because you have a strong desire to eat meat, you may eat it wherever, whenever you want. If the place where Yahweh your God chooses to put his name, i.e. Jerusalem, is too far from you, you may slaughter any of your herd or flock he has given you as I've commanded you, and you may eat it within your gates whenever you want. So clearly, once they got to Jerusalem, they didn't have to take all their food to the tabernacle. Once they got to the promised land, I should say. It doesn't say anything about people living in Jerusalem where it would be convenient to take it to the temple, but I assume it's for everybody, whether you're in Jerusalem or anywhere in the promised land. You don't have to carry your animals to the temple in Jerusalem. All right, well, that's easy enough. But now Leviticus 17:13, Clark quotes to prove that sacrifices, to prove that once the Israelites got to the promised land, they didn't have to carry their eating animals, their animals for food, to the temple. And so he says, Leviticus 17:13 refers to that. It does not refer to the situation where the Israelites were in the wilderness. Now, Leviticus 17:13 says, any Israelite or foreigner living among them who puts down a wild animal or bird that may be eaten must drain its blood and cover it with dirt. He says that's those food animals, that's only referring to once they get to Jerusalem. But now that they're in the wilderness, it doesn't apply, because any food animal cannot drain, you can't drain its blood and cover it with dirt. You have to take it to the bronze altar. That's weak, folks. However, Jameson Fawcett agrees, and Brown agree with Clark. They say that people in the desert didn't slaughter animals for food very often, and so that helps answer the problem of 600,000 men carrying all their animals into the courtyard, which is a problem. That's the first argument, is Leviticus 17:13, 12, and Deuteronomy 12, 20, and 21, that talks about covering the blood up and killing the animal outside of the tabernacle. And since that refers to when they get to the promised land, and they haven't gotten to the promised land yet, then by default, all the animals had to be taken to the bronze altar to be sacrificed. If you're going to eat some pork chops, you're going to eat some steak, you got to take it to the temple first, according to Clark, and I don't agree with that. Well, that's argument number one. Argument number two, and this is the main argument, it's the word that's used in our verse, in verse 3, any man from the house of Israel who slaughters an ox, not sacrifices an ox, but who slaughters an ox. And the argument is, slaughtering is what you do for common food. Sacrificing is what you do for the temple, and for the tabernacle. And since the word is slaughters, it means it's talking about killing oxes or lambs or goats for common food, not for sacrifices. If it had been for sacrifice, so say Adam Clark and Jameson Fawcett and Brown, if it had been for sacrifice, it would have said sacrifice, but it doesn't. It says slaughter, so this is common food. And that, of course, is the main argument that the commentators who say that these sacrifices are common food, that's the common argument they use. Here's what the pulpit commentary says in answer to that, quote, what man soever there be of the house of Israel that killeth an ox or lamb or goat. The use of the word killeth instead of sacrificeth, excuse the King James, is one of the chief causes of the error referred to above, which represents this command as applying to the slaughter of domestic animals, in other words, animals for food, because it says kills instead of sacrifice. But it is always permissible to use a generic in place of a specific term, and its use proves nothing. Probably the sacred writer uses it as a less sacred term, and therefore more suitable to sacrifices offered to the spirits of the fields and woods, which Leviticus is going to talk about here in a few verses. Illegal sacrifices out in the wilderness. And so if you're an Israelite and you're taking an ox or a lamb or goat to sacrifice it in the wilderness, it wouldn't really be a sacrifice, would it? And so it's not quite as holy if it had been sacrificed at the bronze altar. And therefore, the author of Leviticus, i.e. Moses, i.e. God, the author of Leviticus uses the word slaughters instead of sacrifices. But it's still referring to sacrifices, even though a generic term is used. I think that's perfectly reasonable. All right, I'm going to stake my stand on that hill. It's talking about sacrifices. These sacrifices must be done at the bronze altar at the doorway of the tent of meeting. Now, as a matter of fact, all the way through the law, the Torah, the Pentateuch, the people, with few exceptions, were told to sacrifice at the central sanctuary, whether that sanctuary was the tabernacle or later the permanent temple in Jerusalem. Here's some scriptures, Deuteronomy 12, 5 through 6. But you shall seek the Lord at the place where the Lord your God will choose from all your tribes, that's Jerusalem, to establish his name there for his dwelling, and there you shall come. There you shall bring your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, the contribution of your hand, your votive offerings, your freewill offerings, and the firstborn of your herd and of your flock. And of course, that's what the northern 10 tribes of Israel violated when they set up their altars of the golden calves in Dan and Beersheba. They weren't in Jerusalem. Of course, the golden calves themselves were an offense, but also the place was an offense too. They were supposed to do it in Jerusalem. 2 Kings 18:22. But if you say to me, we trust in the Lord our God, is it not he whose high places and whose altars Hezekiah has taken away and has said to Judah and to Jerusalem, you shall worship before this altar in Jerusalem? So God has said to Judah, you shall worship before this altar in Jerusalem. I'm sure referring to this law here in Leviticus that you're supposed to worship in, well, or the law in Deuteronomy at least, that you're supposed to eat at the place that God has specified. Now, what is this purpose of requiring sacrifice? What was the purpose that God had in mind when he required the sacrifices to be done at one central place on the bronze altar in the courtyard of the tabernacle? Why? Purpose number one, to keep the Israelites from being corrupted by their Canaanite neighbors. If they sacrifice there, they're not going to be going over to some Canaanite neighbor somewhere and sacrificing over there. Purpose number two, to keep the Israelites from the temptation to sacrifice in the wilderness. Even though they might not be tempted by Canaanite neighbors, they might say, well, it's just so convenient. All I got to do is walk out the back of the camp here, go out into the wilderness and offer a sacrifice to God. He won't care. Nope. God doesn't want that. He wants the central sacrifice. Purpose number three, to require the sacrifices at the tabernacle, to prevent ordinary Israelites from usurping the priest's office, because an Israelite could say, I don't need a son of Aaron to sacrifice my peace offering and separate all the parts out and give me the meat and he keeps the right foreleg and all that kind of stuff. Let's just go out here and sacrifice out here in the wilderness without a priest. Nope, not going to do that. That would be illegal. Now, this requirement that the sacrifices must be sacrificed at the tabernacle, that restriction could be lifted by God if he so desired, as Matthew Poole points out. Here's some examples in Samuel where the prophet Samuel had sacrifices done not at the tabernacle or not at Jerusalem. 1 Samuel 7:9, then Samuel, he's at Mizpah now. Samuel took a young lamb and offered it as a whole burnt offering to the Lord. He cried out to the Lord on behalf of Israel, and the Lord answered him. So the Lord's not upset with him. He had a whole burnt offering, and it wasn't at Jerusalem. Well, Jerusalem wasn't set up at the time of Samuel yet, but it wasn't at the tabernacle, wherever the tabernacle was at this time. 1 Samuel 11:15, so all the people went to Gilgal, and there in the Lord's presence they made Saul king. That's right near the Jordan River, right where Joshua and the people crossed. They made Saul king. There they sacrificed fellowship offerings in the Lord's presence. Ah, peace offerings, fellowship offerings made, but that's not at Jerusalem, or it's not at the tabernacle. So God can override that restriction if he so desires. We go down to Leviticus 17, verses 5 through 7. The reason is so that the sons of Israel may bring their sacrifices, which they were sacrificing in the open field, that they may bring them into the Lord at the doorway of the tent of meeting to the priest, and sacrifice them as sacrifices of peace offerings to the Lord. The priest shall sprinkle the blood on the altar of the door of the Lord at the doorway of the tent of meeting, and offer up the fat and smoke as a soothing aroma to the Lord. They shall no longer sacrifice their sacrifices to the goat demons with which they play the harlot. This shall be a permanent statute to them throughout their generations. All right, this section refers to two types of sacrifices. One type is a sacrifice to Yahweh, but done in the wrong place, in the open field. The other type of sacrifice was a sacrifice not given to Yahweh, but given to goat demons, both of which are wrong, of course. Now, in verse 5, it said, the reason is so that the sons of Israel may bring their sacrifices, which they were sacrificing. Some say this refers to the Egyptians, not the Israelites. I don't know how in the world that can be. Adam Clark mentions that, but no, we're not going to take it as the Egyptians. It's the Israelites were sacrificing in the open field. And it was lawful to do that before the law, as John Gill points out. Deal also points out that the law commanding centralized worship was not to prohibit an illicit practice. It was rather to prevent an illicit practice from developing, because it was perfectly okay to sacrifice to Yahweh in the field before the law came about. Now, verse 5 says that the people are to bring peace offerings to the Lord to be sacrificed. That's true, but other sacrifices were included in this, I'm sure. John Gill says so. John Gill says, to answer the question, well, why was the only one offering mentioned, the peace offering? What about the burnt offering and the sin offering and the guilt offering? Why was only the peace offering mentioned? Well, Gill said the reason for that is because peace offerings were the most frequent and they were most profitable to the people because they had a part in the peace offerings. They got to eat the meat. Now, see, the thing about sacrificing a peace offering in your own tent or in the wilderness, the priests get cheated out of their part. The high priest is supposed to get the breast, and the officiating priest would get the right foreleg. But now, if you do it yourself, save a little middleman cost. And that's probably why Gil mentioned that, because that's probably what the temptation would be to offer those peace offerings more than any other kind. Now, two generic actions are mentioned in association with these sacrifices, the offering up in fat and the sprinkling of blood. The reason they're mentioned is because they are associated with every animal sacrifice. Let's take the sprinkling of the blood first. Had to be done for a burnt offering, Leviticus 1:5. Had to be done for a peace offering, Leviticus 3:2. Had to be done for a sin offering, which was a bull for the high priest, Leviticus 4:5, verses 5 and 6. The sin offering that was a bull offered for the whole congregation, that was the sprinkling of blood was required in Leviticus 4:17 and 18. If the sin offering was a male goat for a leader, Leviticus 4:25 says the blood must be sprinkled around the bronze altar. If the sin offering was a female goat for a commoner, blood was required to be sprinkled in Leviticus 4:30. If the sin offering was a female lamb for a commoner, Leviticus 4:34 says the blood must be sprinkled in. So that covers all the bases. And the other last animal sacrifice that I haven't mentioned yet is the guilt offering, the trespass offering. Blood had to be sprinkled for a trespass offering, a guilt offering, at Leviticus 7:2. And so when Leviticus says right here in verse 6, Leviticus 17, the priest shall sprinkle the blood, he's referring to all the sacrifices. In verse 6, he also says the priest shall offer up the fat. Well, that was in all the sacrifices too, except maybe a burnt offering, the whole animal's burnt, and that would include the fat. But God got the fat in all the four animal sacrifices. And so these generic actions are mentioned to refer to all sacrifices which must be offered at the doorway of the tent of meeting, i.e. at the bronze altar of sacrifice, or the bronze altar of burnt offering. It's interesting, it's called the bronze altar of burnt offering because the daily burnt offerings were put on there, but all the sacrifices were put on the bronze altar, so I kind of like to just call it the bronze altar, just to maybe avoid a little confusion. There's enough confusion in this book as it is. Verse 7 says that the Israelites shall no longer sacrifice their sacrifices to the goat demons. The Egyptians worship goats, as Adam Clark and Jameson Fawcett and Brown say, and so perhaps the Israelites picked up the worship of goat demons in Egypt and carried it with them out into the wilderness. Now these demons in verse 7 could also be idols. In fact, the NIV note, as a marginal translation, has it as idols. Idols and demons are so close together. In fact, Paul illustrates this closeness in 1 Corinthians 10:20. No, but I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons and not to God. Well, the Gentiles were sacrificing to idols, and Paul says they're sacrificing to demons because there ain't a whole lot of difference. I do not want you to become sharers in demons. You go to an idol feast in honor of an idol, you're eating with demons. Because demons like to hang around idols. Ask any missionaries ever to live next to a Buddhist temple or something in China or India. Demons everywhere. The kids can't sleep, noises in the night, nightmares, and so forth. So the Israelites were doing this kind of thing, and that was an absolute no-no. In fact, the Israelites are called whores. They're playing the harlot, which is a polite way of saying, you're nothing but a prostitute. You're nothing but a harlot. Why is that word used so often to refer to spiritual unfaithfulness on the part of the Israelites? The NIV translated this way, you've prostituted yourselves to the demons. You're a prostitute. You're a slut. Why? Well, the NIV Study Bible on Judges 2:7, which is a long way from here, but the note there says, quote, since the Hebrew for Baal, meaning Lord, was also used by women to refer to their husbands, it is understandable that the metaphor of adultery was commonly used in connection with Israelite worships of Baal. In other words, a woman says her husband is Baal, is Lord, and now she's saying, oh, here's another Baal, an idol, I'll call him Lord too. Well, she's just been unfaithful to her husband, has she not? God is seen as a husband whose wife Israel has been unfaithful. This is all through the scriptures. I'll give you an example here, Jeremiah 31:32. Not like the covenant which I made with their fathers in the day I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, my covenant which they broke, though although I was a husband to them, but they broke the covenant. They broke the marriage covenant, a spiritual marriage covenant, if you will. Now, Adam Clark says that public prostitution is probably not meant here, as some may have suggested. The Israelites playing the harlot by going to pagan temples and joining themselves with temple prostitutes. I would hope things had not gotten that bad. Adam Clark says probably not. And all these statutes about the bringing the sacrifices to the tabernacle, this shall be a permanent statute to them throughout the generations. And of course, that means permanent as long as the Old Testament order existed. The Old Testament order was rendered obsolete by Jesus when he died on the cross and resurrected and set up the new covenant, thus making the old covenant bye-bye. This law of Moses, of course, is called the old covenant in Hebrews, the book of Hebrews, and so it would be gone then. But until then, it's permanent. Doesn't mean permanent till the end of time. We go now to Leviticus 17:8-9. Then you shall say to them, then you, Moses, shall say to them, that's to Aaron and his sons and the children of Israel, as in verse 2, which says, speak to Aaron, his sons, and all the Israelites, and tell them, Aaron, his sons, and all the people. Then you say to them, any man from the house of Israel or from the aliens who sojourn among them who offers a burnt offering or sacrifice and does not bring it to the doorway of the tent of meeting to offer it to the Lord, that man also shall be cut off from his people. Now that threat that the man will be cut off from his people was already made here in verse 4. It's repeated again. And cut off could either mean exiled or executed. People debate that. Either way, it's pretty serious. And I guess if you got exiled in the desert, when you're in the middle of the desert, that's the same thing as saying you die, because how are you going to live outside of the Israelite community in the middle of nowhere? Now these people who are told to sacrifice at the centralized bronze altar in the tabernacle courtyard, those people included aliens. Now, there were two types of proselytes. An alien was a proselyte, people who weren't native Israelites. There were two types, proselytes of the gate. Those were people who just kind of visited and kind of like business people who were on there on a business visa, to put it in modern terms. And they just have to obey the basic laws of the Israelites. They can't blaspheme God. They can't commit adultery. They can't steal, you know, that kind of thing. But now, there was another type of proselyte. That's proselyte of righteousness. He's the one that goes the full Monty as far as being a Jew is concerned. He's circumcised. He does the festivals. He becomes a Jew, basically keeps the law. Well, if he's keeping the law, he's going to be making sacrifices. And so, therefore, if he's going to be making sacrifices, he's got to do it at the bronze altar. He can't make them anywhere he wants. And so aliens are included here. Those aliens have to be proselytes of righteousness, because a proselyte of the gate would not be offering a sacrifice. He's just visiting. So proselytes of righteousness as well as native Israelites, you're going to make a sacrifice. And when it says offers a burnt offering or a sacrifice, it means any sacrifice. Burnt offering is broken out here, just like peace offering was broken out before, but it means any sacrifice. You got to do it at the bronze altar in the courtyard of the tabernacle. Otherwise, nuts to you. You're either excommunicated or you're killed. We go down to Leviticus 17:10-12. And any man from the house of Israel or from the aliens who sojourn among them who eats any blood, I will set my face against that person who eats blood, and I will cut him off from among his people. For the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it to you on the altar to make atonement for your souls. For it is the blood by reason of the life that makes atonement. Therefore I said to the sons of Israel, no person among you may eat blood, nor may any alien who sojourns among you eat blood. Now this is a famous passage, quoted all the time. Leviticus 17:11 is, the life of the flesh is in the blood. Therefore, you don't mix the profane uses of blood with the sacred uses of blood in the temple ritual or the tabernacle ritual. Because life is in the blood, we've got to represent life. When those dead animals die, they give their life on the altar, but the life is a substitute for the life of the offeror. So you're not going to eat blood. because blood has special purposes. Now, I suppose that people might say, well, what about health reasons? Well, I suppose it's unhealthy eating blood. I've read somewhere this is horribly unhealthy. People like to, some weird people like to eat blood. I suppose you can live doing it. I sure wouldn't do it. Of course, you could say one of those nice steaks. Ooh, you see the blood and the gravy mixing together. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, but if you cook it enough, I mean, you know. But this has nothing to do with health here. It's got to do with the Levitical uses of blood. That's why we don't eat blood. Well, not only do we want to respect the Levitical uses of blood, that's one reason why you don't eat blood, but another reason is because eating blood was a prominent part of pagan idolatrous rituals, according to Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, and God does not want the Israelites to identify with pagan rituals. Now, here's a good quote from Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown related to this, quote, "But the practice against which the law is here pointed was an idolatrous rite. The Zabians, or worshippers of the heavenly host, the stars, were accustomed in sacrificing animals to pour out the blood and eat a part of the flesh at the place where the blood was poured out, and sometimes the blood itself, believing that by means of it, by means of eating the blood, friendship, brotherhood, and familiarity were contracted between the worshippers and the deities. They, moreover, supposed that the blood was very beneficial in obtaining for them a vision of the demon during their sleep and a revelation of future events." Oh, sounds like New Age stuff. Drink some blood, do some soul travel, see the demons, see the angels or the guardian spirits or whatever. "The prohibition against eating blood, viewed in the light of this historic commentary and unconnected with the peculiar terms in which it is expressed, seems to have been leveled against idolatrous practices." And Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown quote Ezekiel 33, verses 25 and 26, which we'll read in just a minute. Well, that's reasonable. I'm not surprised that pagans would drink blood. Doesn't surprise me a bit. Other places where it's considered a no-no to eat flesh with blood in it, Genesis 9, 4, this is before the law. This was around the time of Noah. "Also, you shall not eat flesh with its life," that is, its blood. So it was before the law. And here's after the law, and with the exilic prophet Ezekiel, Chapter 33, verses 25 through 26. "Therefore say to them, thus says the Lord God, you eat meat with the blood in it. Lift up your eyes to your idols as you shed blood." So eating meat with blood in it is likened to praying to idols and killing people as you shed blood. "Should you then possess the land, you rely on your sword, you commit abominations, and each of you defiles his neighbor's wife." And you're also screwing around, too, with your neighbor's wife. "Should you then possess the land?" So all those terrible sins are equated by the good Jewish prophet Ezekiel with eating meat with the blood in it. That's serious business. So the Israelites were not to do it. We go now to Leviticus chapter 17, verses 13 through 14. "So when any man from the sons of Israel or from the aliens who sojourn among them in hunting catches a beast or a bird which may be eaten, he shall pour out its blood and cover it with earth. For as the life of all flesh, its blood is identified with its life. Therefore, I said to the sons of Israel, you are not to eat the blood of any flesh, for the life of all flesh is its blood. Whoever eats it shall be cut off." So this is much a repetition of verse 11 here about the life is in the blood. Don't eat it. It more particularly refers to hunting animals caught in hunting. Catches a beast or bird which may be eaten. Maybe they're hunting wild. Well, they can't eat wild boar. That's a pig. But maybe they're hunting deer. Maybe they're hunting a mountain goat. You wouldn't hunt a cow. They're not exactly hunted animals. You wouldn't hunt a bull. You wouldn't hunt a sheep. But you could hunt a deer or an ibex, maybe, which is kind of like a sheep. At any rate, whatever it is. And, of course, birds, a dove, a pigeon, and so forth, you could eat those. And he's saying, okay, you're hunting. You kill an animal. Of course, if it's an unclean animal, you can't eat it. But you can eat a clean animal. But if you're going to eat the clean animal, you got to pour out the blood and cover it up with earth. Pour it into the ground and cover it up with earth. Now, here's some options as to why you cover it up. Option number one, so it might not be eaten by men. John Gill says, well, why in the world would you eat blood that's poured out on the earth? Well, I guess it might not be eaten by men while it's still in the animal. While you cook the animal and the blood's still there, like we eat steaks today. If you pour the blood out and cover it up, the animal will be drained of blood, and therefore you're not going to eat blood in the flesh. So that's one reason you drain the animal. Drain the blood from animal and then cover the blood up. Second reason is so that beast might not lick the blood up. That would show disrespect. Option number three, so the blood might not be poured out as a libation to the god of the chase, as was customary with heathen sportsmen. That's Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown's idea. The blood was actually used in an idolatrous ritual. The god of the chase pour out a sacrifice to him. We don't want to do that. We want to cover the blood up. Protect the Israelites from idolatry. We go down to Leviticus 17, verses 15 and 16, and we will finish up chapter 17. When any person eats an animal which dies or is torn by beast, whether he is a native or an alien, he shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and remains unclean until evening, then he will become clean. But if he does not wash therein or bathe his body, then he shall bear his guilt. Well, first of all, we need to distinguish this eating an animal, eating the blood that's in the flesh of an animal which dies or is torn by beast. This is unintentional because the perpetrator here merely becomes unclean for a day. Whereas the perpetrators earlier of eating blood in the flesh, if you hunt the animal and then you eat with the blood in the flesh, you're cut off. That means you're killed or you're exiled. So obviously that's more serious and that must be intentional. Here, the perpetrator who finds an animal that has died or torn by beast, he's merely unclean until evening. So that must be an unintentional eating of an animal with the blood still in it. Now, what kind of an animal dies on its own or is torn? Well, you know, animals die of old age or die for disease or whatever. Or sometimes another animal will get them and that's how they're torn. So they're dead. They're not hunted dead, but they're dead when the Israelite finds the dead animals. And the NIV Study Bible and John Gill and Adam Clark say that in the case of not a hunted animal that's killed, but an animal that's died on its own or been torn, that animal would not have had its blood properly drained because they'd be found with the blood sitting in the flesh and the beast with torn flesh might not even be dead yet. And so that's why they were not to eat it. I have a little bit of trouble with that. For one thing, the text doesn't say anything. What happens if you find a dead animal or a torn animal whose blood has been properly drained? You find the animal, then you drain the blood. Well, I can imagine there might be diseases in that case. The torn animal torn by another beast probably ripped all up. Probably wouldn't be sanitary. And it also might be hard to make sure all the blood's drained out of it, too. If you kill an animal, you can butcher it in such a way that the blood is drained properly. Now, the next question is how would you eat such an animal unintentionally? We said this is probably an unintentional violation of eating blood. How do you unintentionally eat an animal which dead or torn by a beast? I don't know. Maybe somebody found it and prepared it for you, and you ate it not realizing where the animal came from. But at any rate, you were unclean, which meant until evening, which meant that you could have no conversation with men in civil or religious affairs. You couldn't go to the gate. Couldn't go out your house to talk to people. Couldn't go to the tabernacle. And if you touch somebody else, you'd make them unclean too. Verse 16 says, but if he does not wash them or bathe his body, wash his clothes, or doesn't bathe his body, then he shall bear his guilt. And the guilt, of course, would be cutting off. Excuse me, not cutting off. That's too severe. That's for when you find a hunted animal and deliberately eat its blood. This is if you accidentally eat blood of an animal that died on its own or is torn by a beast. You bear your guilt, and your guilt then would be being unclean until the evening. And John Gill also suggests another way to bear the guilt would be by being beaten. Well, I don't know where he gets that from. Now, one last point. It's interesting that a foreigner could buy the animal that died on its owner that was torn by another beast. Or you could give such an animal to the alien amongst them. Deuteronomy 14:21, you shall not eat anything which dies of itself. You may give it to the alien who is in your town so that he may eat it, or you may sell it to a foreigner. So I guess that took some of the sting out of finding a dead animal. You could make some money off of it. Well, you could give it to an alien, but you could sell it to a foreigner. Ladies and gentlemen, we are finished with Leviticus chapter 17. And that prepares us for moving on to Leviticus 18, verses 1 through 30, concerning unlawful sexual relations. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.